Pastor Todd, I downloaded your Issues, Etc. app for my Android phone, and I listen to it while I'm on the treadmill.
You can listen to Issues, Etc. live or on demand with the new Issues, Etc. Android or iPhone app. You can download these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. in the palm of your hand. Download an app today.
My new Adam really enjoys the app while I'm on the treadmill.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
We who follow Jesus and stand with King have to stand against guns.
Just as the abolitionists vowed that they would remain in the fight until the field was won, we will remain in this fight until every child is welcomed in life and protected by law.
Yes, I'm saved not because I was baptized. I'm saved because I am baptized.
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
Well, an anniversary like this rolls around, and it is... The word sobering doesn't even cover it in any way whatsoever. You think about it, and we've been watching the festivities of our newly elected president. We've been watching the festivities of Washington kind of pulling out all the stops, and then this next weekend, after all of that, after all the pomp and the circumstance, as necessary as it is for our life together as citizens in this country to go forward, after all of that, the solemn march of many of those who have never known an America where abortion on demand wasn't completely legal. If you're under 40, you've never lived in an America where that was not the case. And those of us who can remember America before it, well, it wasn't that great, but Roe was a turning point. And I think 40 years have proven at least that, and that turn has not been for our country's good. Has it been for the good of women, though? People say a major step forward for women. Greetings and welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Colleen Carroll Campbell will be our guest for the first 10 minutes here on this Tuesday afternoon, the 22nd of January, talking about the 40th anniversary of the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision. Then Pastor Tom Baker joins us. We'll talk about Jesus being rejected at Nazareth. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Colleen Carroll Campbell is a regular guest, host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture, and author of the book, The New Faithful. Hi, Colleen.
Hi, Todd.
Have the last 40 years, the post-Roe America, if you will, been good for women?
No, they haven't. Obviously, there have been good points, but the Roe verdict was not good for women, and this entire regime of abortion on demand has not been good for women. And as you said in your introduction, it's often touted that way. This is all about liberating women. But really, I think women are the walking wounded of this battle. We know the 45 million children lost since Roe v. Wade under legalized abortion are obviously the most direct victims. But, you know, our statistics show us that women under age 45, on average, you're going to find one in every three has had an abortion if our current trends continue. And that's a lot of women in this country to be walking around with the knowledge that they've cut off an essential part of themselves. They've rejected the gift of motherhood and done so often under great distress in a culture that tells them that that's liberation, that abortion has now rendered unexpected pregnancies to be a woman's choice, but also a woman's problem. And the solution, of course, being abortion. And so, you know, if that's liberation, no thanks. And I think more and more women are beginning to stand up and say that. And we've seen that in recent decades, especially movements like the Silent No More movement, where women who've had abortions are standing up saying, I'm not here to judge anyone, but I'm going to tell you the truth is I've been through this and I don't feel liberated. Abortion didn't solve my problem. It just created new ones.
We all witnessed over the weekend the inauguration ceremonies in Washington, D.C. And one of the things that I think, and I was trying to listen as carefully as I could, but I think it was conspicuously absent, especially given the proximity of the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, from the official remarks of both the president and the others who spoke there on the dais on the 20th. Abortion, not in any shape, matter, or form, as far as I could tell, got mentioned there. What does that absence tell you?
Well, I think it tells you the same thing that we see in our day-to-day conversations where people will say they're pro-choice, but they don't want to tell you what exactly they support a woman's right to choose. No one wants to talk about the A word or what actually happens in an abortion. And I think Barack Obama very much touted a woman's right to choose, and I'm on a woman's side, and I'm for liberation of women during the campaign, but you didn't hear him actually talk much about abortion, and I don't think you will. Because when it comes right down to it, abortion is one of those things that when we look it straight in the eye and look at what it is, what it does to children, what it does to women, what it does to men who are also affected, there's nothing about it that goes nicely with all those inaugural festivities or those happy, clappy political rallies. There's something very ugly and gruesome and mean about it, and I think that's why we see a growing number of young people, regardless of where they fall on the political spectrum, increasingly opening their hearts and minds to the pro-life message and saying, you know, I may not agree with the theology of everyone who's pro-life. I may not have it all worked out public policy-wise, but I know there's something fundamentally wrong about saying there's an entire class of human beings that it's legal to kill them, and celebrating that rather than mourning that and saying that's actually not the sign of a truly free society.
What is it that keeps its proponents from speaking openly, candidly about it, or at least has kept them up to this point? Because I would say if I were pro-choice, that I would want the president to highlight among the many things that he said, our American journey is not complete until it is accomplished. Well, until we secure once and for all a woman's right to choose, I thought that would be in the list. And if I'm pro-choice and I'm listening and I say, well, where was that? What is it that keeps him silent about it?
You know, I think it's not really in keeping with our founding ideals. And I think on a certain level, even many pro-choice proponents understand that. I mean, you're going to find the Cecil Richards and the Planned Parenthood types, the really hard activists on this issue, perhaps clamoring for that kind of direct acknowledgement of abortion as a positive thing, or at least as a positive choice. But for the vast majority, even of pro-choice Americans, I think they recognize on some gut level that something about God created all of us equal, and something about every human being, you know, has a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Something about that just doesn't square with a woman can walk into an abortion clinic and legally have her child killed really pretty much right up till the point of delivery if you read the law as loosely as it's read and read that ruling as loosely as it's read. A lot of people haven't actually read the verdicts of Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton, but when you read them and see how they're applied, the fact is really it's almost an unlimited abortion license as long as you can supply some sort of flimsy reason for an abortion, even in very late pregnancy. And it doesn't sit right with us, and especially in the age of ultrasounds, when we can see these little human beings at very young ages sucking their thumbs and kicking their feet and wiggling their feet and wiggling their toes and looking at us. And we know that right up practically till the time they get through the birth canal and, you know, and before the partial birth abortion ban, even in the birth canal, they can be legally slaughtered. There's something about that that's unseemly, and we want to turn away, and we don't want to believe that's the kind of people we are. But 45 million children later and 40 years later, I think we have to admit, you know, we are living in a culture of death. There are signs of life and there are signs of hope, but there's no getting around the fact that this is a very sad day for America.
You mentioned young Americans, the post-Roe generation, that very often, although they tend after 4 years of college to be less pro-life than they are going in, but they are more pro-life than their parents' generation. And then most recently, I think it was Time magazine touted the figure that just a very slight majority of Americans consider themselves, whether or not they really are, but they consider themselves to be pro-life. What does this tell you?
Well, I do think we've seen a turning point, even just in the last decade, and the Gallup polls have shown this. The Gallup poll, I believe it was May of 2011 was the big one, or it might have been 2012, but it showed a big shift, kind of that turning point where it's now not just the very young and very old, but it's increasingly just a majority of Americans saying, if I had to choose between these two labels, I would choose pro-life. As you said, that doesn't always mean they're voting that way. It doesn't always mean they're thinking about how that applies to their entire lives and to the entire life spectrum, you know, the way that we think about euthanasia or the frail elderly or the disabled. But at least that's the label that they're gravitating toward. That's, in a sense, the winning side. And I think there is often some pretty dour news on the social issues front for Christians who look to Scripture and to church tradition to find their values and their footing on these issues. But on the life issues, I think there's a lot to be hopeful about, and there's a sense of momentum. We've got the wind at our backs. Even though we have reelected a president who's not running an administration at all friendly to the pro-life cause, we do have a sense, when you look at that March for Life and how large it is, how it grows every year, and how the faces are younger and younger and younger, I think there's a sense that something is afoot in America on this issue. I think the trick is going to be, how do we kind of turn that into actual policy change, and perhaps even more importantly, into culture change? Because, you know, it's one thing to embrace the pro-life label. It's another thing to live it in your own life, to encourage your children and grandchildren to live it, and then to be willing to take that to the ballot box and say, regardless of what other concerns I have, when it comes to choosing my leaders, I'm going to make this a non-negotiable.
Colleen, before we let you go, and thank you for your time, you mentioned before the theological differences that often are profound between people who advocate for the protection of the unborn. I'm a Lutheran, you're a Roman Catholic. The differences there are quite obvious. Why can we, nonetheless, and so many like us, join hands in an effort to protect the unborn here 40 years after Roe?
Because I believe we both worship the Lord of life and we follow the gospel of life, and that calls us to a unity that transcends our differences. And that's not to downplay the differences, as you said, but I think one of the happy things that has come from this 40-year struggle, and obviously the costs of it have been huge, but one of the things that the Lord has brought out of it, one of the good things, it is this kind of new ecumenism of orthodoxy, if you will, that we've seen in the pro-life movement, especially among Roman Catholics and Protestants who are standing up and standing together and saying, you know, we are going to defend some of the most basic teachings of our faith, and Christ has, you know, empowered us to stand together, and he's calling us to put those differences aside, not completely, not to pretend they don't matter, but to say, at least in the public square, we're going to present a unified witness, because there's something very inspiring when you see that March for Life, people coming from all different directions theologically and standing together on this. And especially, and obviously it's mostly Christians who are saying, you know, whatever differences there are, together we can stand and say with the Lord of Life that life is indeed a gift and the human person is indeed beloved by God, no matter what his age or shape or size or ability or location. And we can stand and affirm that together on the basis of reason, but also on the basis of our shared Christian faith.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture, and she's author of the book, The New Faithful. Colleen, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks for having me, Todd.